Isn't that sweet? Can y'all do that with me? Come on, say, there you go, yeah. Well, it's good to have each and every one of you here this morning, and I'm really, really excited to have you here for the start of this very timely and, I believe, important series we're starting today, Till Death Do Us Part. And I want to begin this morning by sharing with you mine and Melissa's love story, okay? And it's really kind of short and sweet, because this is how it happened. About 17 years ago, my wife saw me. And when she saw me, she thought, this guy is an absolute stud. And she begged me to marry her. And I said yes. And here we are today. Right? Who buys that? Anybody? No one? Right, exactly. There's a number of you here that knew us back then and you would hold me accountable. That's not true at all. Actually, the way this went down was around 17 years ago on an Easter Sunday. I saw my wife. And if I can just be honest, because we're all adults here, I thought, now that's hot. Okay. And I thought, okay, good girl, but that's hot. I saw her at church. And so I went home on that Sunday. I went to my mom and I said, Mom, listen, I know you're really good friends with her mother, Debbie. And if you could just kind of work one of those little parenting angles and go to her and tell her, you know, I really think this could work well. You know, this is that arranged marriage stuff and try to hook us up. And, you know, can you do that for me? And my mom did that and we started dating. And we dated long enough for Melissa to figure out she didn't want to date me anymore. And so she kicked me to the curb. She broke my heart, just crushed me, made me feel like I was nothing near what a man should be. And for about a year's period of time, about a year, Melissa and I were just kind of friends. And we hung out in the same circle of friends. We did, you know, some things together. And I annoyed the heck out of her. And I did some really stupid and crazy things. But at some point after about a year, Melissa and I started dating again. And I don't remember how it all went down, but we started dating again. And it got pretty serious. And it was a little rocky here and there. And we were still trying to figure out if we loved one another. But one day, it just kind of all clicked. And we both came to the belief that we love each other. We were in love. And we wanted to get married. And we wanted to spend the rest of our lives together. So in December at Christmas of 1997, I proposed to Melissa. And I'll tell all the fellows here, if you haven't been married before, I did not go and ask her dad before I asked her to marry me, if it was okay with him. And I think he's okay with me today. But I didn't do that. He had to deal with it after the fact. But I proposed. Melissa said yes. And after an eight-month engagement in August the 15th, 1998, and some of y'all think I'm really old, Melissa and I, we met down in the aisle, and we exchanged vows. We had an amazing wedding, and we committed. We made a covenant to one another, till death do us part. And here we are today, 15 years later. And I can honestly tell you this, and I said this to her the other night, I love that girl more today than I did back then. Now, when I said that to her the other night, I will tell you, she did not reciprocate that back to me. So I don't really know, and I'm not kidding. I really don't know where she's at. We're going to have some talks. But I honestly love her more. That is our story. That is our love story. Now, as I was thinking about Melissa and I and our journey, and when we came to this point, we knew we wanted to get married and we had fallen in love. What I was thinking through is how that Melissa and I back then started dreaming together. And the way our dream kind of looked was there was like three main sections to it. There was the start, how we would start. There is the middle of like our life together. And then there's kind of the end. And for Melissa, as I best understand it, the start in her dream was this beautiful wedding where she is dressed in white. She's walking arm in arm with her dad down the aisle to meet the man of her dreams, right? And with all of her best friends and sisters as bridesmaids and people that were speaking and singing and that were a part of the ceremony, just making it her special day. That was her start. That was her dream. Now, if I can be honest, guys, the start for my dream was the wedding night. Okay, it was not the wedding. It was like, let's get through that. Let's get to the wedding night and then the honeymoon that were to follow. I'm just being honest, okay? And so that was where our dream began. And then our dream moved into the middle or the life together, those experiences. And that dream consisted of us getting our first apartment together, for us traveling together, taking vacations, us going and building careers together, us, you know, experiencing things together, us having a family together. And I will go ahead and tell you, and if you're our guest, you don't know this, but we never dreamed of having five kids. So that was not a part of the dream. It just happened along the way, okay? But we had those dreams. We had the dreams of serving in church and just serving other people together. We dreamed of getting in shape and taking care of ourselves and all these other dreams. And then the end part of our dream is that we had this dream about us growing old together. And for us to go gray together, for us to, after the kids and all those have left the house, for us to every night spend time watching Jimmy Fallon while eating popcorn with M&Ms in it. That's the way Melissa likes it, you know, sitting on the couch. But in essence, really the best way I can describe to you what we have this dream for at the end of our marriage together, I think can be seen in this movie, and hopefully you can see this, The Notebook. Did any of you ever see The Notebook? Okay, how many of you cried at The Notebook? Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And if any of you don't remember this, this movie came out in 2004 with Noah and Allie. And it has this rocky story. But at the end, here's the moment that really just, I think, encapsulates the dream for the end of our marriage that Melissa and I have. Is that Noah and Allie one night went to sleep, right? And they went to sleep together, and they kissed one another. Allie was suffering from dementia, and Noah would read to her daily her notebook, her story of their relationship and all the twists and turns. But that one night, they went to sleep, and they never woke up the next morning. That the nurse found them as best friends, hand in hand, in the bed, together, and they made it to the end, till death did them part. Well, here's what I believe is true in a crowd like this. I believe all of us in here can identify in some way or another about just looking for Mr. and Mrs. Right. Some of you here are right now doing that. You're praying, you're wishing, you're looking for that person. Some of you here think you found them, and you're down that path. You're engaged, or you're moving towards getting engaged. You're going through counseling, all these things. Some of you are newly married, or you've been married for a little while, and you feel like, okay, this is one. And some of you, you're starting to wonder if the person that you're with is really the person the Mr. Right or the Mrs. Right. And so this is where a lot of us are. But a lot of you also can identify with me on the dream. All of us in here at some point, I think in these relationships, have these dreams. We have the dream of the start. We have the dream of the life experiences together. And we have the dream at the end. And I believe all of us here can identify with deep down having the longing to experience the notebook ending. Right? To where you grow so close to each other, where you are very, very best friends, to where the only thing that takes you apart is death itself. I believe that's in the hearts of most people, if not everyone in this room today. But here's the challenge we're facing today. In our world, more and more people are losing hope. Actually, here recently, there was a survey that was a global survey that found that 73%, now let me just kind of help you figure what this looks like. 73% roughly of people are saying they believe the grass is greener somewhere else. Now let me help you understand what that looks like with what we're talking about. That means that 3 out of 4 married people today think and have a desire for the notebook ending, but they don't believe that it's possible where they're at in their relationship. They think it may be possible with another one. 3 out of 4. Also today, we know in our country specifically that over 50% of married couples, 1 out of 2 couples, and even a little bit higher than that, are actually getting to the point, instead of saying having the view or the vision or the dream of till death do us part, they've actually exchanged that for I can't wait on death and we need to do everything to get apart. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? And more people are exchanging that. And here's the reason why. We know this is true. We know this why this happens. It's because when you get into the middle of that dream that you had before you married, into the meat, the doing the life together, these experiences in life together, is things become stressful, things become tough. You experience financial stress, you experience family stress, you experience career stress, and all these different stresses in your marriage, in your relationship. And what happens is the romance, ladies, is not what you dreamed it would be with every evening when you came home to that man of your dreams, right? And guys, the sex or the intimacy or whatever, the conversations, the times going to all the ball game, all those things, these dreams that you have are not the way you dreamed they would be. And so stress and strain starts building within the relationship, and you find yourself in the middle of it. And ultimately, here's what happens. You lose hope of that type of ending. That type of dream, that type of vision for your marriage. Do y'all hear me this morning? This is what happens. And seemingly, 3 out of 4 are there. And half are actually moving apart from each other and severing that relationship. But if I can I be honest with you this morning? Share something with you? I honestly and sincerely believe with every fabric of who I am, within the fabric of who I am, I believe that inside of every one of you, no matter how deep down this goes, all of you here have a desire to grow in a relationship with someone that is your best friend, to grow old together and to experience the vision, the dream of the notebook type ending. Till death do you part. I believe that. And I believe that in a room like this with all of us, that really just begs the question. Are we all just a bunch of hopeless romantics? Is this something that Western culture and the movies like The Notebook and other movies have just kind of pushed us towards and drawn us towards, where we just kind of are looking for this? Are we looking for something that really God doesn't have for us? That God doesn't really want for us? What's the answer? I want to answer it this way this morning. A little shy of 2,000 years ago, Jesus was out and he was teaching, preaching, performing miracles. He was a rock star at this point. The crowds were following. His name was being mentioned. He was being seen as an authority that was speaking on behalf of God and someone that was speaking on behalf of God and about God in ways no one else had spoken. And as the crowd started growing, on one occasion, Jesus had a conversation. Really, you could call it a teaching moment, where some people approached Jesus and they wanted to find out about where he stood, where God stood on marriage and divorce, or on marriage and just the view of marriage. This is what they wanted to do. Now, before we jump into this, let me just say this to you. Is that in their day, even though they were a little shy of 2,000 years ago, they were having marriage problems also. This is not new. They had divorce statistics back then as well. I don't know what they were. I don't know if they measured them. But they had divorce statistics. They had needed counseling. They needed help. They had romance issues. They had intimacy issues. They had all those same issues. And so with that as the backdrop, these religious leaders, these specific religious teachers named the Pharisees, who are the ones that were preaching and teaching and counseling people, were debating the subject amongst themselves. And they approached Jesus. They said, Jesus, we want to know where God stands, or where you stand, or what you think on this subject. If you have your Bible, you can look with me quickly at Matthew chapter 19. Matthew records the way this all went down. And he starts off this way. Matthew 19 verse 3 says, and the Pharisees, these religious preachers, teachers of their day, they came up to him, to Jesus, and they tested him. They wanted to just kind of put him in a corner and say, hey, you show us if you really got this down. And they asked him this question. Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? So they approached Jesus and they asked him that. Now, ladies, let me just go ahead and tell you, they did say your wife, because in their day, women in many ways were seen more like property. That's just the way it was in their part of the world in their day. Thank goodness today, a lot of that has changed in our part of the world. But on that part of the world, that time, that day, he went to them and here was the question we're asking. Jesus, what are the options out? What does God say are the ways we can get out of these marriages, out of these relationships? What does God allow us to get out of these marriages? And then they ask him specifically, is it for any cause? Now this is going to sound extremely vain and extremely stupid, but back then there was a debate that men could divorce their wives because they cooked a bad dinner. Now, I just want to say, if you apply that to today, that would be a train wreck, wouldn't it? I mean, everybody would be divorced. You know, my wife would divorce me for that first steak I grilled. I mean, it was bad. It was terrible. And you know, but this was some of the debate. It sounds so foolish, but literally they were going, okay, Jesus, tell us, what are the rules? What do you allow? Now, Jesus responds in a way that they never would have dreamed. Jesus, they were expecting to give some if, thens, then this, and those types of solutions and answers. But here's how Jesus responded. Verse 4, he answered, have you not read, or in essence, he's saying, seriously? Have you not read that he, God, who created them from the beginning, made them male and female? He says, do you not remember? You guys are the teachers. You're the preachers. And he's pointing back to what Moses recorded in Genesis. And he says this, and then God said, Jesus is saying, this is what God said. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they're going to Jesus. They're saying, hey, Jesus, tell us, what reasons do we have to get out of these things? How can we get out of these things? What does God say? What are your thoughts on that? And Jesus said, seriously, guys? Like, really? Don't you remember what God said? God created them male and female to be married. And then God said this. The boy is to leave the authority, the leadership, the dependency of his parents. He is to hold fast, or you may, in your translation, say cleave to his wife. And they are to become one flesh. Now, here's what he means and what he's saying there. The vision, the dream that God has for you is for you to become one. And that does not mean necessarily and only sexually. This is actually a word that's used even in the Old Testament where it talks about God pouring out His Spirit on all flesh. What He means is that you are to become one at the deepest level possible in a human relationship between a husband and a wife. To the point to where you become something more than just two people together. You become one flesh. Now the best way I can illustrate this and explain it is going back to the movie Waterboy. Y'all seen that movie? I'm not going to try to impersonate Adam Sandler, but he talks about H2O, right? Well, H2O water consists of hydrogen and oxygen put together and it becomes water. If you take hydrogen away, it's no longer water. If you take oxygen away, it's no longer water. You follow me? But when hydrogen and oxygen come together, they form something totally separate and totally unique and totally different. Jesus is saying that what God created marriage for is to become so close, so intimate in your relationship that you're no longer Jonathan, in my case, and Melissa, but you are one. In essence, God is a hopeless romantic. That's where it comes from, guys. That's where this desire, this longing that's in all of us comes from. God desires that for you. Now, Jesus continues, verse 6. He summarizes, so they, people who are married, are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate it or pull it apart. Wow. So they approach Jesus. They're wanting a way out. They're wanting answers, right? They're wanting if, then this type stuff. And Jesus says, whoa, wait a minute. No. I want to remind you of something. The dream, the vision that God had when He designed and created marriage was for you, in one way or the other, to have the notebook ending. Best friends doing life together and only death pulling you apart. And then He says, what God has made one, no one is to try to undo that. What God makes one, no one is to try to undo that. Now, let me let you take a deep breath for a moment. Because here is probably what was taking place in their crowd, and here's what's probably taking place in here a little bit. As you start thinking to yourself, okay, I get it. Yeah, that's a longing inside of me. I do want to grow old and finish this life together, and I want that type of ending for my marriage. But Jesus, you know, he's not really that sensitive. Right, ladies? Or the guys may say, but Jesus, have you seen how she treats me? As she talks to me. But God, you know how He spends money, right? You know there's trust issues. What, you know, God, she's kind of letting herself go. You know what I'm saying? What do we do? And what happens here in this moment, if we're honest, right, is that dream, that vision, that we have that longing inside of us that God has created marriage for, that when we see the movies, it kind of just brings that to the surface. But when we start thinking about our spouse, we go, "But time out. That's impossible because of the way he is or because of the way she is." My bet is that in the crowd that day, people were thinking the same thing. Don't you agree? I mean, they're thinking, you don't know him. You don't know her. Let's go get some coffee. Or let's go to the well and get a little water, right? Let's talk this out. So one of the Pharisees in the crowd who was there wasn't going to let this go. So he asks a question in verse 7. Well, Jesus, then why did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and to send her away? Jesus, why did Moses say that you could just divorce them? Give them a certificate, send them a packet. If this is really, because I understood what Jesus is saying, if this is really what God wants, if this is really the way God has made this work, then why did he do this? Watch Jesus' response. Because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning, it was not so. Wow. Jesus said, you want me to tell you why, guys? Your heart was so hardened, selfish, want to do it your way, that for the sake of survival, for the sake of the relationship, just to move on, Moses said, I'll allow it. But Jesus said, I'm telling you, from the beginning, that was not God's desire, that was not God's dream for your marriage. That's not His desire. Now, again, every one of us in here, we know deep down, that we desire for till death do us part. And Jesus is saying, dig deep, guys. Drill deep. Listen to your heart. Listen to the Spirit of God. Listen to your soul and what he's saying. You were created and you were called to marriage to stay together till death do you part. Now, after Jesus delivers this, there is no doubt that there are people in the crowd that have been divorced, people that have one foot out, one foot in, people's really struggling, people completely hopeless, right? And for very, very good reasons. Just like here today, the same is true. There are some of you here that have been divorced, and you have your story. There's some of you here that have one foot in, one foot out. There's some of you here, hope is bleak. The end is, I mean, absolutely just tough for you to imagine making the Notebook ending come true in your marriage. I get that. I understand that. Just as in Jesus' day. And so here's the question for us. And I'm sure that Jesus, if these folks could have had the follow-up conversation, they would have asked him this. Is okay, Jesus, how in the world, what do I do to try to get my marriage from where it is now to what I desire and I long for and what God has called us and created us to have in this marriage? Jesus, my wife is this. Jesus, my husband is this. Jesus, we are coexisting. Jesus, we are only together for the kids. Jesus, we don't trust each other. Jesus, we have no intimacy. Jesus, we don't, and on and on and on. And that's the question, right? I get the vision. I get the dream. I get it in here too. But I feel like it's hopeless. And friends, I'm just going to tell you this morning, that's the heart behind this series, Till Death Do Us Part. As I recognize today, you guys have really, really tough challenges, tough things you're going through, or if you're not currently, you very well may have in the future. And my heart and my passion is for this week and the next few weeks is to help us look at and deal with some of the main enemies that are crushing marriages and dreams today. What I want for you to do is to dream again. What your Heavenly Father wants, what Jesus wants for you, is to dream again. He wants for you to have dreams for your current marriage, no matter where you're at, what you're going through. It's not over. It doesn't have to be over. There is hope. And this morning, I want to encourage you with some hope. You guys want some hope? All right, here's some hope. Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament, years after Jesus had been crucified, resurrected, ascended into heaven, he encountered Christ, changed his life, changed the trajectory of his life. He wrote letters to all these different churches, Christ followers like what we are, in all these different cities. And when he wrote these letters, he addressed issues they were dealing with. And you know one of the issues he was dealing with then? The same thing. Marital struggles, marital problems. You see this in a number of his letters. There's one letter we're going to look at today. It's in Ephesians. It's a letter to the church at Ephesus. We're going to be in Ephesians chapter 5. If you want to turn there, you can. But here, before we get into this, let me just share this with you. When Paul was writing to them, his goal was not to hurt them. His goal was not to discourage them. His goal was not to in any way just tell them it's over, cash it in, you know, put the bar so high that no one can ever experience it. But Paul's hope was to give them something very practical, something very tangible, and something that could really help them get their marriages on track and for them to become and grow deeper and better in their relationship. So here's what Paul did. Paul was compelled, he was moved, he was inspired by a dream, and this is a dream that was a reality, of something that took place that changed his life and was changing the lives of many others. And it was Jesus and what he did for the world. In these words we're about to read in just a moment, in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 through 29, what you find intermingled all through here, woven through here like an artist, was that Paul was writing about marriage, but all in between it, he was writing about Jesus and the church. And what I want to do for just a moment before we dive into the text is I want to read to you the words that he ascribed to Jesus. And I have extracted those from these passages, from these verses. And I want for you to just hear these before we jump into the text. Here's what Paul said. He said, Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Watch this. Christ loved the church. Now, let me ask you a question this morning. Who is the church? Christ followers. So who is that? You. So read it this way. Christ loved you. Or you could say Christ loved me. And gave himself up for me. and for you, that he might sanctify you or me, having cleansed you or me by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present thee or you to him in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that you might be holy and without blemish. You know what Paul is captivated by? He's captivated by what Jesus did for him and what Jesus did for everyone else. And in these words, in these verses where he's about to talk about something people are struggling with and they're really fighting through and they're going, what do I do? And I've lost hope. And God, how can I do this? Paul says, I want to encourage you. And here's how I want to encourage you. Think about what Jesus did for you. Think about what Jesus did for you. We all have a story, don't we? I can tell you about my story, that when I became a follower 17 years ago, and where I was and what he did and then where I'm at today and the impact he made on my life. And you have the same type of story. It's different. It's unique. But you had Jesus just amaze you. And he changed your life. He changed the trajectory of your life. He rescued you. He died on the cross for your sin. He pulled you out of the clutches, if you will, of sin and something you can never free yourself from. Jesus did that for you. And all through this word, these words we're about to read, that is the what I believe Paul has a vision of, what Paul is moved by. And he's saying, guys, I'm telling you, reflect on that. Now, with that said, I'm going to read from the Message translation this morning, because the way Eugene Peterson wrote and translated these words, these verses are amazing. Watch this, ladies. With that in mind, Ephesians 5, 22 through 24, wives, understand and support your husbands in ways that show your support for who? Christ. The husband provides leadership to his wife the way Christ does to his church, not by domineering, but by cherishing. So just as the church submits to Christ as he exercises such leadership, wives should likewise submit to their husbands. So what Paul is saying is, ladies, think about Jesus. Think about what Jesus did for you. Think about your story and your interaction and the life change that you've experienced with Jesus. And then they say, and what Paul's saying is in response to that, follow, respect, submit to your husband. Now, my wife, if she were to think about that, or if you as another lady would think about that based on the lack of perfection in your spouse, none of you would do that, would you? There are no dudes that are perfect. True? And see, this is where the problem lies. Is a lot of times when you remove Jesus out of the picture and all you do is look at your spouse and you say, I'm to submit to you, I'm to follow you, when you look at your husband, but you see his imperfections, you see where he loses it, you see where he takes football way too seriously. That's a confession of mine. You see where he gets angry with how he handles the kids. You see when he's not sensitive and tender and romantic and all these things. Ladies, it makes you go, no, if he gets better in this area, this area, this area, and this area, then I will. What Paul's saying is, no, here's the deal. The more you focus and gaze upon Jesus and what he did for you, the more you're going to realize how imperfect you are. And ladies, the more that you experience and understand how imperfect you are, it's not going to destroy you. You're going to experience the depths of love and grace of your Savior. And it will give you a confidence. And it will give you a confidence and it will give you a humility that when you look at that sucker, that husband of yours, that's imperfect just like I am, you're going to say, I'm imperfect too. And out of response to what Jesus has done for me, my heart is moved to support you, to help you, to encourage you, and to follow your leadership in our marriage. Now, fellas, before you get a big head, let's look at what he says to us. Husbands, go all out in your love for your wives. All out. Exactly as Christ did for who again? You, the church. A love marked by giving, not getting. Christ's love makes the church whole. His words evoke her beauty. Everything he does and says is designed to bring the best out of her, dressing her in dazzling white silk, radiant with holiness. And that is how husbands ought to love their wives. They're really doing themselves a favor since they've already won in marriage. Now, guys, I want to say just very, very plainly to you, is if you look at your wife and you say, well, I don't go all out in loving her. Look at how she treats me. Look at how she speaks to me. Look at this and that, right? And you have your reasons too. Just like with your wife, the same is true about you. Your real problem is not with her. Your problem is you and Jesus. Because I'm telling you, fellas, that, and I said this one time in a counseling appointment, my sweet wife to my side, I said, guys, or I told this couple, I said, the greatest changes that have ever taken place inside of me towards my wife, I'm being more tender and loving and not being as angry and, you know, all those things, has not been because she tells me all these things I need to do or me waiting on her to do certain things. It's when I get before Christ and I get before Him and humble myself before Him and the gospel and what He has done for me and how He loves me in spite of all this crap in my life soaks to the core of who I am. It changes me. And I'm telling you all, fellas and ladies, that when you humble yourself before Jesus and you see your own imperfections, you will not look at your spouse and start picking them apart and saying, if then, then this. You will be moved by the grace and the love of Jesus that He showed you guys and He has shown you ladies, and you'll be moved together in your marriage. This is what Paul says. Again, as you can tell all throughout this, right? He talks about men, then he talks about Jesus. He talks about ladies, and he talks about Jesus. What is he trying to say? Ladies, focus on Jesus. Quit focusing on your husband. Guys, quit focusing on your wives. Focus on Jesus. And then in response to that, I'll bring you together. He summarizes in verse 29 through 33. No one abuses his own body, does he? No, he feeds and pampers it. That's how Christ treats us, the church, since we are part of his body. And this is why a man leaves father and mother and becomes mother and cherishes his wife. No longer two, they become one flesh. Now watch this. I love Paul's honesty here. This is a huge mystery, and I don't pretend to understand it all. What is clearest to me is the way Christ treats the church. And this provides a good picture of how each husband is to treat his wife, loving himself and loving her, and how each wife is to honor her husband. Paul again comes back and says, listen, if you want the marriage that your Heavenly Father dreams for you to have, that He's giving you a dream of inside of you, if you want to have, if you will, the notebook type finish, and I don't know what that's going to look like for all of us, but to where you are best friends, you're so vulnerable, you're so loving, you're so close that you just, you grow in your relationship all through the tough things of your marriage. He says you have to take your eyes off of the spouse and you have to put your eyes on Jesus. Both of us. And when that captures your heart, I'm telling you, when that captures your heart, you will change as a husband and you'll change as a wife. And the Spirit of God will move you closer to one another. I can tell you this for all the guys in the room, that when I'm walking closely with Jesus, being humbled and just absolutely thankful, filled with thankfulness over what Jesus has done for me, I'm the best dang husband I could ever be. I really am. Because I'm sitting here and I'm going, I'm just thankful for what He's done for me. And I look at my sweet wife, and who is great. And I go, hey, I want to help her. I want to love her more. And the same is true for you ladies. When you ladies are walking with Jesus, and your heart is fixed on Him and not on the imperfections of your husband, and you're growing and enjoying the grace of God, you will become the best wife you could ever be. You see, the purpose for marriage is deep friendship, this oneness. Unlike any other relationship you could have on this planet that God has given you in your heart to experience. The meaning behind that, though, is that as husbands, as we gaze upon God and grow in our relationship with God, we then encourage our wives to become the truer, better them, which is becoming more like who Jesus wants them to be. For all the ladies here, as you gaze upon Christ, as you soak up what He's done for you, then you too will, the meaning is for you to motivate and move and encourage your husband to become the truer, better him. And through that, we come closer to God and we come closer to each other. You know, my hope and my heart for these 4 weeks that we're going to be talking about marriage is to see some of you regain, or actually all of us, to regain that dream, that vision, that hope for the relationship we always dreamed of. It won't be perfect, but I'm telling you, they all can be much better than what they are right now. And the place to start is right where we're starting today. It's the gospel. It's Jesus in you, Jesus in me, and Jesus in our marriages. What Paul's saying here too, if you read it in other translations, he's saying, look guys, this is the best answer I can give you on where you're at in your marriage. on how for your marriage to become everything that God desires for it to become and what you dream of. If you tried other ways, if you look for self-help formulas and those things, which they have their place, but if you don't start here, you will not experience the marriage of your dreams. You will not. This is how God designed marriage. This is how the marriage grows and how the intimacy increases in your relationship. And so this morning, here's what I want to finish up with. For all of you in the room, are you walking with Jesus? Are you daily experiencing and reflecting on and absorbing what He did for you? Or are you just on your way to work driving, just going, God, give me a good day. Help me not to make any mistakes at work today. Help me get promoted, make more money and all that stuff. Or are you doing that over your dinner, right? Or your breakfast or whatever. I mean, is that what your life looks like? And I understand you're busy. I mean, everyone's extremely busy. But is that what your relationship with God looks like? Your marriage is probably where it's at in some ways due to wherever you're at in your walk with Jesus. On both sides. So it really is one of those questions about if you put Jesus first, my belief and my own experience has been your marriage will blossom from that. So if you're not doing that, I want to encourage you daily, daily, humble yourself before God. Reflect on the grace of Jesus. Absorb that. Let it soak into you. It will give you a freedom and a peace beyond what you've ever experienced other than just knowing Him. And watch what God does in your marriage. Watch what He'll do in your marriage. If you're here this morning and you honestly know, okay, Jonathan, I hear you. But like, you know, give me some like A plus B equals C stuff, right? Like formula. I can tell you there are no formulas. Our souls are far more complex than that, right? Relationships are far more complex than that. And if that's your pushback, my question for you is have you ever even followed Jesus? Like really followed Him, all in. Here's my life, Lord. Because until you do, I don't really believe you're going to experience, and according to what God says, I don't believe you're going to experience all that God has for your relationships. But you can. You really can by giving your life to follow Jesus.